Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. If global climate change is so devastating, how come nobody saw it coming decades ago and sounded the alarm? Answer, they did, and we'll hear them do it today. I hope you'll stay tuned. Over the past 40 years or so, I've been noticing a number of trends. All of these trends are bad. Three of the trends you just can't miss. 1. The rise of corporate power. 2. The decline in American democracy. And 3. The accelerating destruction of the Earth's ecosystem. Alas, these three trends are mutually reinforcing. So, for instance, the less democratic our country becomes, the more powerful the corporations become, and the faster the environment is destroyed. The more powerful the corporations become, the more they control government, and the more they drive government to reduce democracy still further. Indeed, increasing corporate profits by reducing democracy is the whole point of the secret trade deal that Obama is working so hard on, the TPP, or Trans-Pacific Partnership. The whole point of TPP is to prevent democratic governments from enforcing any laws that might interfere with corporate profits, like laws to halt global climate change before it kills us all. I wish I could tell you about three positive trends I see, too, to balance the three negative ones. But I can't think of any. I could name 10 more negative trends if you like. But with just three, we're already way into overkill. So let's stop there. Today we'll focus on just one trend, the trashing of the ecosystem. In the process, you'll see lots of ways of connecting this to the other two, powerful corporations, and dying democracy. Today we'll hear a very nice collage by Virtual Renderings, or Chaz K. It's titled, What If You Knew? Our ecosystem crisis has finally begun to reach public consciousness. A fascinating thing about Chaz K.'s collage is that it shows that scientists have been warning us about this crisis for at least two generations. One of the voices we'll hear soon is from 1958, Frank Baxter warning about climate change on the Bell Telephone Hour. I'll be breaking in now and then to identify some of the speakers. We'll hear about half of the collage today. The title is What If You Knew? Without further ado, here we go.
What certified instructors have taught you. Bad skills are like viruses and can spread through unregulated teaching. They cause confusion by destroying the standard and can lead to misplaced confidence in ungrounded practice. Remember, unlicensed knowledge is pornography. Certification is security.
By listening to this, you should be advised you're violating your listener's license agreements. You could be subject to suspension of your listener's license. You should disconnect now come across this by accident.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
If you knew the earth was dying, if they said this on the news, if they would clarify the picture instead of seeking to confuse, if you could see the ice caps melting, if you could watch the oceans rise, if you could see the consequences right before your eyes, if you knew the kids were dying, if you could look inside the river where their food comes from, filled with cyanide, if you could hear the parents pleading, if they were looking right at you, if you could see the anguish in their hearts, what if you knew?
The Bell Telephone Hour, 1958.
Extremely dangerous questions, because with our present knowledge, we have no idea what would happen. Even now, man may be unwittingly changing the world's climate through the waste products of his civilization. Due to our release through factories and automobiles every year of more than 6 billion tons of carbon dioxide, which helps air absorb heat from the sun, our atmosphere seems to be getting warmer.
This is bad.
Well, it's been calculated a few degrees rise in the Earth's temperature would melt the polar ice caps. And if this happens, an inland sea would fill a good portion of the Mississippi Valley. Tourists in glass-bottomed boats would be viewing the drowned towers of Miami through 150 feet of tropical water. Foreign weather, we're not only dealing with forces of a far greater variety than even the atomic physicist encounters, but with life itself.
Alan Watts, 1971.
I've just come back from Los Angeles. I was down there to meet with a group of rather important people, people in the movie industry, scientists, and so on, who were considering calling a congress of the best minds in the world to meet in Los Angeles in the near future to be a kind of planetary alarm conference. They wanted scientists and statesmen, religious leaders, to do something to impress upon the world through all the media that we are in very serious danger of destroying the biosphere, that is to say, the whole envelope of living creatures which covers this planet, through pollution, overpopulation, nuclear fallout, poisoning of our food, and very lack of food. And we met to discuss the problem of organizing this conference, and here were all these brilliant people. And it came over us that we really didn't know what we ought to say. I mean, you can scream and create a state of panic, but that won't do any good. And when it came down to it, we didn't know what we ought to say because we really don't know what to do. Some things that we might do, for example, to increase the food supply with high-yield crops, may be ecological mistakes. And so the consensus of almost everybody at the meeting was that in some way or other, the human race has to learn how to leave the world alone and let what is called the natural homeostasis, that is the self-balancing process of nature, take care of the mess.
Each of us all across this great land has a stake in maintaining and improving environmental quality, clean air and clean water, the wise use of our land, the protection of wildlife and natural beauty, parks for all to enjoy. These are part of the birthright of every American. To guarantee that birthright, we must act, and act decisively. It is literally now or never.
Most U.S. presidents over the past 40 years have paid lip service to protecting the environment. We'll hear from many of them.
Our program will emphasize conservation. The amount of energy being wasted, which could be saved, is greater than the total energy that we are importing from foreign countries. We will also stress development of our rich coal reserves in an environmentally sound way.
The natural world is dying. This may sound dramatic, but I think it's a perfectly realistic statement to make, and I'm not the only person who makes it. And it is dying fast. So fast that at current trends, much of it will cease to be capable of supporting complex forms of life like human beings in a matter of decades.
Now, it seems to me that if we would concentrate on resolving the problems of the automobile, the combustion engine, the pollution factor, and we've gone a long way in that, I think of myself as an environmentalist.
We all know that human activities are changing the atmosphere in unexpected and in unprecedented ways.
I recommend that we adopt a BTU tax on the heat content of energy as the best way to provide us with revenue to lower the deficit, because it also combats pollution, promotes energy efficiency, promotes the independence economically of this country, as well as helping to reduce the debt. And it is environmentally responsible. It will help us in the future as well as in the present with the deficit.
Business as usual. Day after day. Business as usual. Just grinding away. Try to be righteous. Try to be.
Nafis Masarak Ahmed.
So, for example, with carbon trading, big business is able to invest in some kind of enterprise, say in China, which is probably not very green, and where they're likely to make substantial profits. And by investing in that, they're purchasing a number of carbon credits. The value of those credits is equivalent to a certain amount of emissions. So what they can say is, having purchased that number of credits, that is equivalent to a certain amount of greenhouse gases that we've reduced. So then they can put on their books that they've actually reduced their emissions by a certain amount. And because they've spent a certain amount of money on carbon credits, when actually all they've done is invested in an enterprise to make profits and use the image of that investment as a green investment to say that we've reduced our carbon emissions. And in fact, they may well be increasing carbon emissions. So this bonanza of profiteering has been going on for the last few years.
Millions of small farmers, forced into debt and unable to farm their degraded land, have migrated to the city. Most end up here in the slums. There's little chance of ever getting out.
Everywhere, you can see for yourself, there's dirt, stagnant water, cesspools, choked up drains. Significantly enough, next to it is a garbage dump.
These people don't reside here out of choice. Most are here because of so-called development.
The slum, I think, can be regarded as the ultimate symbol of the industrializing world. It is the human garbage dump.
Darkness it comes to inflict its life-destroying poison on the careless, the unwary, the unprotected. No sane person would deliberately expose himself to it. Yet today, young people are flirting with a poison every bit as deadly
as civilization.
The United States is committed to strengthening our energy security and confronting global climate change. And the best way to meet these goals is for America to continue leading the way toward the development of cleaner and more energy-efficient technology.
We've got to leave this planet at least as good as the planet we inherited from our parents, but we've got a bigger problem with climate change. We sent $1 billion to foreign nations, many of them hostile, and because of our addiction to oil, and in the bargain, we're melting the polar ice caps. Changing the weather patterns all around the globe.
These are not very bright guys, and things just got out of hand. And that really sort of sums it up. The system began to use sort of the mechanicalistic discoveries and technical science stuff to create weapons, to create things that would control nature, that people would buy, like TVs and entertainment systems and stuff. And it just began to grind up the natural world to produce all of this stuff in an attempt to have a certain kind of control. Even though control is really impossible in the system, living in a kind of cooperative arrangement with nature is not something that has been in that framework at all.
When you believe the current system is the best we have, And when you believe that the war on terror is just a war against crazy barbarians that hate us because of our freedom and our way of life, then you're out of touch with reality, and you don't really get the systemic causes of what's going on. So when policymakers see things like climate change, peak oil, the economic crisis, or the fact that we're reaching limits in food production, they try to deal with them in isolation, instead of recognizing that these crises are fundamentals of a failing global system. Because of this ideology, because of these subliminal ideas, we're straitjacketed, and we're unable to respond in the way that we need to. Recognizing that we need not just tinkering, but transformation of the system.
We'll hear a variety of right-wing climate change deniers interspersed with some more sensible voices.
The science is clear that man-made emissions of air pollution and global warming gases are changing
global warming
our atmosphere.
Is still an issue that the scientists are still debating, and you know it, and I know it.
The debate on the causes of climate change are far from settled.
Well, the climate's always changing. That's not the fundamental question. The fundamental question is whether man-made activity is what's contributing most to.
I think CO2 is a problem, and therefore I don't think it needs to be regulated.
We all breathe CO2, climate changes, but there's no evidence at all that it's man-made CO2 that causes the climate to change.
My view, having looked at a lot of these trends, is that some of the most worrying predictions are most likely to be true. If you look at these things in their totality, what we're seeing is industrial civilization is unsustainable. And all of these different crises are really just different manifestations of the fact that this civilization in its current form cannot survive the 21st century.
The idea of human-induced global climate change is one of the greatest hoaxes perpetrated out of the scientific community. It is a hoax.
I'm only concerned about the incredible frenzy and hype for something that's a total myth. It's amazing to me how upset so many people are. The existence of all these billions of people on Earth have all influenced the climate of Earth, but none of it is of significance. And thank goodness, things are doing just fine.
Why is the picture of the world painted by conventional knowledge all wrong? As I realized much later, it is wrong because it is designed to justify the industrial system. And it is the industrial system itself which is the source of the global environmental crisis we face today.
Vandana Shiva.
The first generation of pollution is what we are dealing with in terms of climate change. It is basically burning of fossil fuels and putting pollutants into the air. Originally, we could see it all. Then they learned ways to not have these smokestacks. A lot of it is now invisible, but it's still there. And climate change is all linked to that first generation pollution. The second generation pollution was chemicals. Toxics that were put out, Rachel Carson woke us up to that. The third generation of pollution is tampering with living systems at the genetic level, introducing genes that don't belong to those plants, and then the fact that plants hybridize, the wind blows, the pollinators pollinate, means that these traits that have been introduced then spread through normal biological processes and normal ecological processes, and then they enter plants where they don't belong.
The greatest hoax, I think, has been around in many, many years, if not hundreds of years, has been this hoax on the environment and global warming. You notice they don't call it global warming
no,
anymore.
No. It's because it's getting cooler.
It's weather control.
Yeah, it's getting cooler. You can't call it global warming anymore.
So what we need, what the world needs, is more fossil fuels. The evidence we have is not just that fossil fuels aren't ruining our planet, they're making it much better. Climate-related deaths are going down. And so what we need is many, many more fossil fuels so that people can eat and they can have food.
Cities turning into wastelands, everybody moved indoors. The sun was killing anyone left outside.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes, and true currents in thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Good planets are what? Hard to find. Good planets are in demand. Clean beaches and sparkling sands and the land masses and room to spare. That's good, yeah. Jet streams and perfect air. High forests and low wetlands are good planets are in demand. And the mind don't know. And the heart can't see. Let the blind man go to his destiny. Yeah. Good planets are rare indeed. Rain falling on crops and seed. Big rivers and good topsoil. Fuel sources from cane to oil. Green garden, all that we need. Good planets are rare indeed. Right.
It strikes me more and more that our failure to feel at home in this astonishing brain in which we live is the result of a basic initial mistake in our thinking about the world, and is in turn the cause of what is beginning to look like the failure of our technology, of the fact that everything we're doing to try to improve the world was a success in the short run, made amazing initial improvements, but in the long run we seem to be destroying the planet by our very efforts to control it and improve it.
Thank you for being conscientious. A visual record is being taken and filed with the Department of Biological Flow.
Why do you think that U.S. policymakers are more concerned with Obamacare and just this other political squabbling partisanship than the systematic destruction of the globe, especially with the U.S. just becoming number one in oil and gas production?
Well, it's not just for that reason. It's that they are incapable. They are sociopaths. They are psychopaths. And they are completely and utterly disconnected from the fact that we only have one planet on which to live, and we all live here together. And if we don't save our ecosystem, our habitat, there's no hope for anything in the future. It's not just extreme short-sightedness. This I would call evil, but I think in a broader philosophical sense, looking back across the whole history of the Earth and all of human civilization, this is truly the death of a meme, a mindset. It's all the stuff that most people accept as being a given before they try to analyze. And that meme is dying, and it's breaking free from that meme. It's a war for consciousness.
Everybody knows something's wrong with our world. Everybody knows something's wrong with our culture. And I'm quoting Einstein. You know, he said, we can't solve the problems facing us with the same kind of thinking we were doing when we caused them to begin with. One of the things he was realizing is this reductive, sort of mechanicalistic, rational, controlling approach to the world was a real problem. What most people don't get is when he says we have to use a different kind of thinking, what he means is we can't use linear reductionism. We have to use something else entirely. And the one thing that leads to a different kind of thinking is feeling.
We've known what was coming for a long time. In 1847, George Perkins Marsh, naturalist and ambassador, a combination you hardly ever hear about these days, naturalist and ambassador George Perkins Marsh in 1847 predicted that if we burn fossil fuels, we're going to warm up the atmosphere. A half a century later, Svante Arrhenius, in April of 1896, wrote a paper predicting that if we keep burning fossil fuels, we're going to experience a 1 degree centigrade temperature increase as global average in about 2000. 104 years in advance, he missed by 0.15 degrees. Not bad. We've had warnings for a while. In 1918, 1987, the undersecretary for the Navy said that if we, sorry, this is 1986, said that if we keep burning fossil fuels, we could expect human extinction within a few decades. A few decades later, and what do you know, we're there.
Most people out here have, well, then we all live in cars. Most of them don't run anymore. We're on foot a lot of the time. Try to stay down during the day, go out mostly at night. Even with the sunscreen, it doesn't really help. Apparently they used to make sunscreen as a, sunscreen was a lotion. Today we, there's actually a fabric called sunscreen.
It's not merely capitalism, it's socialism too. It's every ism you want. It's civilization. It's civilization. The first civilizations arose a few thousand years ago, seven of them simultaneously on different continents. And at that moment, civilization became a cul-de-sac. It became a death trap. It became a patriarchal set of living arrangements that drove us into human population overshoot. And civilization was a cul-de-sac, but it wasn't a one-way street. In fact, there are at least three cultures, the Mimbres, the Olmec, and the Chaco, that when civilization failed, and here I'll use the example of the Mimbres near where I live, the Mimbres gained access to a cheap energy source known as maize or corn nearly 1,000 years ago after having lived in the area for about 10,000 years. And within 20 years, they were so deep in human population overshoot, and then they had a drought, and they ate the seed cone, ate the seed corn. 20 years after they began civilization by growing grains, they collapsed catastrophically, and a few survivors walked away. And the survivors that came back didn't do corn ever again. They didn't do civilization. They didn't store grains to get them through the hard times. The Olmec did the same thing. The Mimbres, the Chaco, all these cultures collapsed. And when they returned from that, they went back to hunting and gathering, not to civilization.
And here we'll pause this interesting collage. Thanks again to Virtual Renderings. I'll post a link to the complete hour-long version on our website, and that is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust for New World Notes. Thank you for listening. Please come back again next week, and illegitimi non carborundum. Ciao.